Oh, that music you're going to be hearing, probably likely hearing on Sunday. That's CBS music, intro music for this year's Super Bowl, and been around for quite a while now. And we're going to be talking about this year's Super Bowl later on, along about 11:45 or so, with our guest Pete Doherty. But right now, we're going to take a look at the history of the Packers at the Super Bowl with our guest Cliff Crystal. He's the official historian of the Green Bay Packers from Green Bay, spent 36 years as a sports writer. He wrote for the Manitowoc Herald Times, the Green Bay Press Gazette, Milwaukee Journal, and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And his four-volume book series on the history of the Packers is wonderful. It's titled The Greatest Story in Sports, Green Bay Packers 1919 to 2019. So as we talk with Cliff, I hope you'll join in. What do you want to know about Packers history? Who's your favorite player from the past, maybe? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Cliff Crystal, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
My pleasure.
You know, I had some fun talking with you when your book series came out. I remember interviewing you and team president Mark Murphy at a special WPR member event at Lambeau Field. So it's always great to talk with you. And, you know, that book series, it goes to 2019. Are you going to, are you keeping track since then?
Yes, still working as the team historian and keeping my records and files, and book is still available.
Yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful book, and I really enjoyed reading it. Well, Packers history, and maybe as it relates to the Super Bowl, let's talk a little about that. The Super Bowl hasn't been around really for all that long. I think the first Super Bowl was in 1967. And the Packers, of course, played a role in it. But why was it created in the first place, or what were the conditions around it? I think it's kind of interesting.
Well, in 1960, the American Football League started play with eight teams. And with television contracts now in play, unlike in earlier years when the NFL faced competition like with the All-American Football Conference after World War II. Television in play, the AFL owners were able to come to agreement with the networks on some lucrative contracts and were competitive in signing players, draft picks, and the cost of doing business in the NFL skyrocketed. And as a result, the owners of the two leagues eventually determined it would be wiser to merge. And once they did, so when the Packers played in the first two Super Bowls and won both, the leagues were still separate, but the merger had been agreed to, which brought about the Super Bowl. And then 1970 was the first year when after the first Super Bowl after the merger had taken effect.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And back then, today it's like a national holiday almost. What do you got? 110 million people are expected to see it. There's, what, 330 million or so in living in the U.S., so that's like one in three people in this country will be watching it. Wasn't that big a deal back in 1967? And in fact, I think, weren't there two networks? Both CBS and NBC covered it?
Yeah, one was, CBS was the NFL's network. I think it was NBC was the AFL's network. And so that game was broadcast by two networks. It was not sold out. And it was really anticlimactic. the Packers beat Dallas both years to reach the Super Bowl. And when they beat the Cowboys, they were declared NFL champions. And actually, it was after the Ice Bowl when they were declared, when they beat the Cowboys and were credited with being the first team in the history of the NFL to win three straight championships under a playoff format. So the Super Bowl wasn't really taken that seriously until the Jets beat the Colts in Super Bowl III. And the public viewed the game as being now being competitive. First two Super Bowls, I think it was just taken for granted that the Packers were going to beat the AFL champion.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And there's some pretty interesting history of those first couple of games. Of course, Max McGee comes almost immediately to mind when it comes to that early history.
Yes, and I don't know if how true that story was. McGee even admitted at some point in his life, he told the story so many times, he didn't know how much of it, but it was true. Dave Hanner, who was in charge of bed checks that night, insisted. He was a longtime player, assistant coach, scout with the Packers, insisted that he checked McGee's room at least twice and that there was no way he snuck out that night. So, who knows?
Yeah, I remember his comment there saying to Boyd Dowler, supposedly before the game, "I hope you don't get hurt today because I am hungover," or something like that.
Yeah. One thing, again, that makes the story a little bit suspicious is that McGee was more a ladies' man than a big drinker, from everything I've heard.
Yeah. Oh, man. So the Packers won both of those. And I actually watched. I was a young guy, a very young guy. I watched the game with my first game and second game with my dad and my brothers. And it was kind of a big event for us because the Packers were in it. But I can't imagine that the audiences were all that large. You had the Packers versus what, Kansas City in the first
Kansas.
One?
Yeah, I remember really watching it as a college student. The Chiefs had a lot of talent. They just had some glaring weaknesses that the Packers exploited. And Oakland was a good team, too, probably better than the score indicated. But I think, they were facing Vince Lombardi in a championship game, and nobody in the NFL had fared well, very well in those situations either.
You know, in the early days of football, many teams didn't draft black players. And what was the Packers' stance on integrating the team? And I know there were black players who really helped the Packers to success in the Super Bowl 1 and 2.
No question. I mean, that was the strength of the team. Lombardi had an open-door policy from the beginning when he took over as coach in 1959, and that was at a time when some teams had quotas. And he inherited, I think it was two or three black players, and by the time he won his third straight championship, Super Bowl II, he had six black starters just on defense, and five of them started in the Pro Bowl. That was clearly the strength of the team. The early championships, pre-Super Bowl championships in 61 and 62, the Packers were built around their running game, Hornung and Taylor in the power sweep, and their defense to a degree. In the last three championships, they were built around their defense. Bart Starr had an MVP year in 66, but in 65 and 67, he wasn't even a Pro Bowl quarterback.
Amazing. Irene in Phillips, Wisconsin, has something for us. Let's go to Irene. Hi, thanks for calling. Hi, Irene, are you there?
I'm here. Let me turn my radio on. I'm listening to your guest. I'm a Bears fan, but my late husband and I were Packer fans for Super Bowl II. We went down to the Orange Bowl. Our tickets were about $12 a piece. The Orange Bowl was not even filled, and we played the Raiders. I don't even remember the score, but we met Vince Lombardi the night before the game and shook his hand and wished him and his group well. He was with family and friends.
Oh.
And that you don't see that anymore. You don't see a lick of them.
Yeah, you're right about that, Irene, I think. Comment on that, Cliff?
Yeah, actually, it's interesting because the Packers, to show how different things were, the Packers stayed at a basically ma-and-pa motel in Fort Lauderdale. And Bart Starr's pregame press conference on Saturday, I believe it was conducted. He was sitting in a lawn chair around the pool at that hotel with just a little small cluster of reporters asking him questions.
Oh, man. Oh, man. She mentioned the Bears and, you know, the Lombardi Trophy. Of course, named after Vince Lombardi, goes to the winner of the Super Bowl, and there were Bears fans that thought it should have been named the Halas Trophy.
The NFC Championship Trophy is named the Halas Trophy, and I believe that the Lombardi Trophy was named first. Shortly after he died, obviously George Halas was a great coach, won 6 championships, same number as Curly Lambeau. But I think that they were known more for, and even Lombardi to a degree, for their success in the pre-Super Bowl era,
yeah.
Which I also find unfortunate that, a lot of people treat the history of the NFL like it started with the first Super Bowl, and those championships won by teams prior to that don't really count, which is ridiculous in my standpoint.
Mike in Sheboygan, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Larry. I wonder if Mr. Crystal is familiar with Willie Davis's autobiography. I had a serendipitous chance to meet him when he ran a radio station in Milwaukee, and I called, and we had some discussions because of some of the history. But what made me, he told me some stories about when Lombardi was in the hospital on his deathbed. Willie Davis went to visit him, and Lombardi told Willie Davis, he said, "You were the best trade I ever made." And that story came right from Mr. Davis, and I'm wondering if the book that Willie Davis wrote has gotten any interest, because to me, that story between Lombardi and Davis is one that's just, it still brings tears to my eyes to think that Lombardi was more of a father to Willie Davis, and he made those comments to me directly. And have you ever heard of the book by Willie Davis or any knowledge about his book?
Yeah, I have a copy. I've read at least parts of it. I think there's no question Lombardi felt that way about all of his players, and particularly his black players. As Bob Skowronski said, he treated all of them the same. And I think that was very true in Green Bay, and probably not true in a lot of the other NFL cities at the time. It's interesting that before Willie died, I wrote a story, it's probably 4 or 5 years ago now, for our website about how the Packers really were successful and won those last 3 championships because of Lombardi's open-minded approach, and that the key to the success of those teams was their black starters on defense.
Yeah.
Davis, Willie Davis is in the Hall of Fame. Herb Adderley, Willie Wood, Dave Robinson, they're all in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, Lionel Aldridge was the other starter, and Bob Jeter was a Pro Bowl starter that year. So, you know, that was the strength of the team. And I got a note from Willie thanking me that finally somebody had given them the credit that they were due. And I don't think there's any question about it. Yeah. And is was Willie Davis the greatest trade Lombardi ever made? I'm sure he said it. How can you argue with him? But I'd also note that the trade for Henry Jordan was a key trade, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And Willie Davis, of course, was successful, so successful on the football field, but he was perhaps even more successful in business afterwards. And I know he made a lot more money after he quit playing football and got into broadcasting and purchasing.
Well, I'm sure he did. You know, some of those players, starters even, were making less than $50,000 when the Packers won Super Bowl I or II.
Yeah. Cliff Crystal, our guest today, the official historian of the Green Bay Packers. We're taking a look at Packers history and quite a bit of it relating to when he was, when the Packers were playing in the Super Bowl, but others' comments as well. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Our engineer today, A. Emily Ralph. Our producer, Clara Neipert. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at Packers history today, the Green Bay Packers history, with our guest, Cliff Crystal, the official historian of the Green Bay Packers. Cliff authored the wonderful book. It's titled The Greatest Story in Sports, Green Bay Packers 1919 to 2019. Really have enjoyed that book very, very much. Tyrone in Milwaukee, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for giving me an opportunity. Larry, my friend, good morning, good afternoon, late morning, early afternoon to everybody. Tyrone Debbie speaking, Northwest side of Milwaukee, all the Wisconsinites. Mr. Crystal, thank you for the book. I have to get my hands on a couple copies of it there, myself, my nephews. I'll tell you, allow me, Larry, I'll be about a couple minutes here, but my dad and I, to begin with the Super Bowl, I was born in 58, so I feel a little bit better knowing that the year I was born is Super Bowl 58. I got my number up there for the year I was born in, so I feel pretty good about that. But I'm still aching a little bit because we were basically four quarters and about 5 minutes away from being there. That's the part that really still, you know, stings and burns with me and the way that it ended there. Because it was certainly a squandered opportunity when you look at we beat both. Well, we beat Kansas City, too. I mean, we beat Kansas City here. We beat Detroit. And, yeah, we came up through the Bears and Dallas. So, yeah, it was ours to take, you know.
Well, Tyrone, thanks for calling. And I know Pete Doherty is going to have more to comment on about that. But, Cliff, I thought they were going to beat the 49ers, too.
They certainly outplayed him for most of the game. And when a team peaks like that at the end of a season, it's a shame they couldn't take advantage of that opportunity. I think they might have had difficulty beating the Chiefs a second time or.
Yeah.
The Ravens' defense was pretty special, but it would have been a huge thing for the Packers to get to the Super Bowl this first year. But who knows? Maybe it'll make them hungrier for next year.
Yeah.
I think that the Packers losing the 1960 championship against the Philadelphia Eagles was used by Lombardi as kind of a springboard to their future success.
Julia in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm been a fan all of my life, homegrown Wisconsin Packer fan, and wondering if you could just historically tell me, are there any women that have been involved in the organization at any level? You know, are there any women NFL players yet? Are there any women that helped in the organization of the Packers, or were part owners, or significant people.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Julia. Women and the Packers.
Yes, I mean, we have a couple vice presidents, and any number of women working in the in our front office, or, you know, in the business end of the company. Many of them, probably most of them, very very efficient people that have I've leaned on numerous times for help with my work. As for the history of the Packers and its association with women, you know, you can go back to the 1950s, 1950, I believe it was, when the first women's quarterback club in the country was formed in Green Bay among a group of women to support the Packers. There were women involved in the 1950 stock sale and the annual season ticket drive when the Packers were struggling to survive and depended on their gate sales to make $10,000-$15,000 or whatever their net profits were at that time. Those figures are pretty close. They also, I took credit for having the first Women's Ladies Day. I mean, in 1950, as I tell people, for the first 30 years of Packers history, they were perpetually on their deathbed. Yeah. I mean, there was no day that went by when they couldn't have folded. And so in 1950, especially when they reached out to Joe Fan to sell stock, they also realized the benefit of appealing to women and to try to create, expand their fan base. And so they made a serious attempt to get more women involved, to get more women to go in games. And then I will mention this name, and if she wants to Google it, she might come up with a story I wrote about her last year, a woman by the name of Sue Wallen, W-A-L-L-E-N. She could Google that with my name and Packers.com. She was critical to the Packers' success and survival in the 1930s and 40s. She ran the she was the manager, ran the desk at the Astor Hotel, where all the players would stay at that point in time. It was downtown Green Bay. All the single players would stay there, and most of them were single back then. And she was called the mother of the Packers because she took such good care of them, looked after them. In fact, Curly Lambeau would instruct his rookies to report to the Astor Hotel and meet up with Sue Wallen, and she'd take care of them when they reported to camp for the first time. It's really a great story, wonderful story about a woman who was, she didn't work for the Packers, but certainly played a key role in their survival just by keeping players happy back then.
Yeah.
Who weren't making a lot of money and were living in a, you know, in a new city, a different climate.
Oh, man. Julia, thanks so much for that question. Appreciate it. Dan in Middleton, we'll go to you. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Two quick stories. I'd like your guest to comment on the most colorful Packer of all time, Johnny Blood McNally, who was a friend of our family and visited us when we were kids. And secondly, our senior athletic banquet from a little town in western Wisconsin, Durand. Our guest speaker was Willie Davis, who drove from Green Bay to speak at an evening event and then afterwards drove all the way back to Green Bay, which shows you how tight money was then that they would do such a thing for a small amount of money. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, Johnny Blood, certainly the biggest character in Packers history, and that was his name. The NFL, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, for whatever reason, concocted the name Johnny Blood McNally when he was inducted, but he never played by that name. You can go back and look in any program, any press guide, any newspaper story, any official lineups. the name McNally never appeared. So Johnny Blood McNally never played in the NFL. Johnny Blood did. I think it's actually, to be quite honest, I think it's absurd that people call him Johnny Blood McNally. He was John McNally off the field and Johnny Blood on the field. And that's how he said he preferred to be called. But anyway, I'll get off my soapbox. It is true that the players, especially in the 60s, would branch out around the state. And even after, you know, Lombardi arrived and the new stadium was built in 57, the Packers still went and spoke in different organizations and different cities and basically to build interest in the team. And wasn't until 61 where the stadium was sold out on a season ticket basis.
And Johnny Blood, so what was so crazy about him?
Just a character.
Okay.
Loved to drink. Green Bay had a thriving red light district when he played, and he loved to visit that section of town and those different houses. He had the vagabond halfback.
All right, there we go. Dan, thanks again. Helen in Little Chute, your turn. Hi, Helen.
I've been a Packer fan since I was 12 years old. I grew up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and I'm 75 now. I had three brothers who we would watch the Packers. They were Lions fans. And what they would do is we'd sit on the living room floor, and the Packers were doing so well. I remember to the left, Dollar, to the right, McGee. And as I recall, Tony Cannadale, wasn't he one of the announcers? In any event, when the Packers would score, my one brother, Rick, would pound on my arm, and every week I would end up with black and blue all over my arms. And to this day, I'm still a Packer fan. I love the Packers. Don't miss any of their games. And my brothers are all, every time we get together, we, you know, have this little dialogue about how the Lions have never gotten to the Super Bowl, but the Packers have. So anyway, I just wanted to say how much I really adore. And Paul Hornung was my favorite player. Right now, Aaron Jones is my favorite player.
Helen, thank you for calling. She mentioned Tony Cannadale. And he did announce, but he had also played.
Right. He was a Lambeau player, mostly through the lean years, late 40s, early 50s. In the Pro Football Hall of Fame, she mentioned Paul Hornung. That's the player and the only player that Vince Lombardi called the greatest player I ever coached. I believe the Forrest Gregg quote were Lombardi has supposedly, allegedly said that Greg was the finest player ever coached. It was one that was fabricated. Even Forrest Gregg couldn't tell you where that quote originated. But anyway, I think if I interviewed probably 30-plus Packers who played for the majority of the Lombardi years, and almost all of them would agree that the Lions of the early 60s were the toughest competition they played during the Lombardi era, more so than the Cowboys or any other team, Giants, Bears. Those Lion teams, my favorite game of all time still was the 1962 Packer-Lion game in stole what was then Green Bay City Stadium, now Lambeau Field, 9-7. Won in the last minute by a Herb Adderley interception and a Paul Hornung field goal. I think when you look back at the rosters of those teams, there were just two outstanding defenses, and the Lions never won a title back then because their offense was a weakness, but the Packers, again, have just a great offense at that time. And then the rematch on Thanksgiving was that memorable game where the the Lions just crushed the Packers, their only loss in 1962.
Yeah. Canadeo reminds me, I'm thinking about announcers, Ray Scott was always my favorite.
Right, he did the TV games for most of that time. Earl Gillespie may have done some games when either on radio or television when Lombardi was coaching, I'm not sure. And then, but the longtime radio guy was Ted Moore.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Rodney in Green Bay, we'll go to you now. Hi, Rodney.
Yes, I've been saying for years, telling a story that I believe I was the warmest fan at the Ice Bowl, because my mother, who is a diehard Packer fan, 8.5 months pregnant, and she climbed all the way up. She was 3 rows from the top. So I often say I was the warmest fan ever there.
So. And the youngest, for sure. And there's always great stories about people claiming to be at the Ice Bowl. I believe Rodney here. But there are some dandies, aren't there, Cliff?
Yeah, I believe anybody that tells me they were at the Ice Bowl, I believe. And Ron Wolf was the one that came up and, you know, made the joke about everybody claims they were at the Ice Bowl. Ron was new to town. You know, when he arrived in 92, that would make a lot of the Packer fans, people who might have been at the Ice Bowl, probably, what, around 50 years old. And so I don't think it would have been unusual for him to meet mostly people when he first got here or went to the Ice Bowl. I think the crowd there was probably one of the youngest crowds ever at a Packer game, certainly in that time, because a lot of parents back then, and I've had friends tell me this story where their parents just said, hey, I'm not going to go sit out there and freeze, but I'll drive you out to the stadium and you can sit in the seats and you guys, the kids can freeze, which was not unusual back then. I mean, you could be 10, 12 years old and your parents might have dropped you off at a football game and headed home. Plus, because it was so cold, at kickoff, all the ushers or the people that are manning the gates, security people, left, and so the gates were just open that anybody could just could show up and just walk in. And I also know friends who walked right down in the field because there was nobody there maintaining security and watched the game from the sidelines.
Oh, man.
So it was a game unlike really any other because of the weather and then the resulting consequences.
Yeah. And there's still controversy around that about who did the blocking to get Bart Starr into the end zone.
Yeah, I think it was Ken Bowman and Jerry Kramer deserve equal credit.
Yeah, Ken never got the credit that he probably deserved, rest his soul, which is too bad. Well, the Packers were in 5 Super Bowls, so that's almost 10% of the Super Bowls, maybe 9% or so. I don't know what my math here on this, but they won 4 out of 5, and won with 3 quarterbacks.
Yeah, New England and Pittsburgh have won 6. San Francisco and Dallas have won 5, and the Packers are next with 4. I know a lot of fans have been disappointed that they didn't win more with Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, but those are not easy things to do. Just, look at the NFC North. All the Vikings were an expansion team in 1961, but the Bears and the Lions are 2 of the oldest franchises in the league, along with the Packers. And the Bears have won 1 Super Bowl, and the Vikings and Lions have yet to win any. So I would say count your blessings with 4.
Yes, that's right. I remember watching the Bears' 1 victory would have been, let's see, 1967's, no, not 67, 1997, somewhere in there. I happened to be in Trinidad at the time, and they didn't have television coverage in Trinidad, so I got over to Grenada to watch the game with a bunch of expatriates, to watch the Patriots and the Bears. I forget the year.
I think it was 87.
87, that's, yeah, I was trying to remember when I spent a year in Trinidad. 87.
I will say this, that was one of the greatest defenses in the history of the Super Bowl, and I think if Charlie Martin had not slammed Jim McMahon to the turf and virtually ended his career the following season, the Bears could have had a dynasty.
Yeah.
They didn't have a quarterback after once they lost McMahon.
Well, what's the, you've written extensively, of course, and wrote this wonderful book, which is actually four volumes. What can we learn from knowing sports history?
Well, I think basically what you can learn from any history, that if you know it, you're less likely to repeat the mistakes of the past. And just how teams were built, the Super Bowl teams were built. I mean, basically all NFL champions, going back to 36, the first year of the draft, were built through the draft by drafting and developing players, not by trades, not by free agency. For example, I wrote a column that you can find at our Packers.com website about how this team, this Packer team of last season, was built on the axioms of the game and the history of the game, and quoted people that had told me, offered insight to me throughout my career as a sports writer. For example, number one was John Madden, who told me that you needed to draft your quarterback when you didn't need one, because once you need one, you'll never find one. And basically how true that was. The Jordan Love pick, I never could fathom how fans could criticize that choice. Others as well. I think Jim Finks's famous quote that, coaches coach and players play and general managers manage and owners own, how true that was. That, that was this team this year, that young team that bonded together. Again, the history of the league is that it's a young man's game. And I think that was critical to the success of the Packers this year. And another thing, I think a lot of people probably were wondering, how could a team that lost Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams and Bakhtiari, three of their best players of all time, and improve on last season? And Vince Lombardi was a firm believer in that it was more important to get rid of players than to go out and find players.
Yeah,
that you got better by getting rid of players I quoted him as saying that if you believe a player cannot play up to the same standard as he did the previous season, it's time to get rid of him.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was famous for getting rid of players a year too early rather than a year too late, and often before they even reached the age of 30.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Cliff, on that note, that kind of brings us to this year, as we will be talking with Pete Doherty in just a minute. I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It's always fun to have you on and talk about Packer history, and I hope we can do it again. Thank you, Cliff.
Thanks for having me.
Cliff Crystal, official historian of the Green Bay Packers and author of the book The Greatest Story in Sports, Green Bay Packers 1919 to 2019. And he says he's keeping it up to date. So there you go. All right, coming up, as I said, Pete Doherty is our guest next. And we're going to talk about this year's Super Bowl and probably a little about why the Packers aren't in it with him. And I wanted to also talk with him about how the NFL decides where to host the Super Bowl. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. You'll be hearing that sound on Sunday, the Super Bowl right around the corner. It's Chiefs versus the 49ers. Who do you think's going to win? Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today as we talk about football's biggest game of the year with our guest, Pete Doherty. Pete's a Packers columnist for the Green Bay Press Gazette and with USA Today Network Wisconsin. He's covered the Packers since 1993, and we'll talk about the game, and we'll talk with him about a little about how the NFL decides where to host the Super Bowl. Love to hear from you. Will you be watching the Super Bowl this year? Why or why not? If you could choose where next year's Super Bowl is played, which city would you pick? I don't think you can pick Green Bay, but give us a call anyway. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Pete Doherty, welcome back. Thanks for joining us again.
Well, thank you for having me, Larry.
Oh, man. Well, here we are, less than a week away, and it just grinds on me that the Packers aren't in it this year because I thought they should have been.
They were playing as well as anybody at the end of the year there. This is the most, as you said, I've been covering since 93, and this is the most I've seen a team improve from September to January in all those years. And, you know, they were as good as anybody, not saying they were better than everybody, but they were as good as anybody, you know, by mid-January, and they were that close to moving on, and they were a real threat to win the Super Bowl. And as Cliff was saying, this year proved all those team building axioms to be true. And I mean, it was just amazing how that young team and all those young players, you give talented guys a chance and you live with the growing pains, you can be rewarded in a big way.
Yeah. As I was thinking back to Super Bowls, and most of them are held, of course, in warmer places. I guess the Minnesota got a couple of Super Bowls, and Detroit got one, I think. I remember there was a lot of grumbling from people about having to go someplace like Detroit for the Super Bowl because of the cold. How does the NFL decide where it's going to be held every year?
So they've got, you know, there are kind of the permanent cities that are in the rotation. So you've got New Orleans, Los Angeles, Miami. I suspect Las Vegas will be part of this rotation now where every 6 or 8 years it'll end up in one of those cities. Arizona, they're probably in, I guess they'd be in that rotation too. And all of those are, you know, very much climate related. But if you build a new stadium, the league will get you a Super Bowl at some point. Even I'm pretty sure the Giants Stadium, the last time that got rebuilt, they had, and it was, you know, unlike Detroit and Minnesota, which were dome stadiums, that was played in open air. Now, I think they were holding their breath that whole time because of, you know, weather concerns and all that. And I'm guessing if they built a new stadium in Green Bay, which they're not going to do, but if they did, they might not get that Super Bowl. And that would be in part because of the weather and in part because, you know, they don't have the infrastructure to host all those people in the city.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, this is, your city gets picked. Of course, it's, you've got about 5 years, I think. Isn't it about a five-year rotation that they announce?
Yeah, it's pretty far in advance. It's at least three or four. And again, there's so much planning that goes into it. Atlanta's another city that I think might be part of the regular rotation too. But yeah, it's somewhere in that vicinity. It's something I've actually paid less attention to now than I did, you know, years ago when, you know, you were, I was so interested in where it is. Now it's just the same rotations over with the new, you know, the new stadiums put in. So I really only look like a year or two ahead just to see what the possibilities are in case the Packers go. But yeah, I think it's about 4 years in advance or so is when the cities know.
Yeah. And the, of course, the economy is just huge for something like that. And it's interesting on ticket prices because a gal called the show while Cliff was on and mentioned going to Super Bowl II of the Packers. And I forget what they paid for tickets. It was like a couple of bucks. It was just a few dollars. And now it's, what is it?
Oh, I don't even.
I think the cheapest ticket is like $5,000.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I know when the Packers went after the 96 season, so January of 97, I remember through an agent, a player agent, I know when players and agents get a couple tickets each, everybody in the league. So I got a couple tickets for friends through him. And if I remember right, they were maybe $750 each. And now, yeah, the cheapest ones are, you know, $5,000, I would guess, and maybe even more than that. And the secondary market, I'm sure, is, you know, much higher than that.
Yeah. Well, here we've got the Chiefs, Kansas City Chiefs, and the San Francisco 49ers, and they're playing in Las Vegas. Which is kind of interesting in a way. Certainly the NFL has done a complete turnaround when it comes to gambling in the city of Las Vegas.
Yeah, that does. You know, there's just, they can't resist the ridiculous amount of money that you can make, you know, being associated with that and being sponsored by, you know, some of the gambling entities, and they resisted. And then I think when they saw how much money there was to be made, they obviously, yeah, they did exactly, you know, a total 180. And now you can, I think it's going to be where you can place bets when you're sitting in a stadium.
That's absolutely amazing. And just the betting and for the Super Bowl, you can bet on pretty much anything. The coin flip,
I think the length of the national anthem is one of them.
This year, I'm betting that I'm betting that there's a bet on how many times Taylor Swift is shown during the game.
I'm sure there is, and I guess that tells us that people will gamble on anything.
Oh, my goodness me. Well, we've got the Chiefs and the 49ers. I heard Patrick Mahomes was asked, I guess, I don't know, it was yesterday, or how does he get ready for the Super Bowl? And he says, well, I have my usual way of preparing for the Super Bowl, which struck some people as, all right, you're bragging here. It's 4 out of 5, the last 5 years, the Chiefs have been to the Super Bowl, and Mahomes is, you know, he's been playing 5 years, and 4 of the 5, he's been at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, he's the best, you know, like before, before the season, you know, right before the regular season starts, we have to, you know, if you work for Gannett, Wisconsin, we make, you know, the people who cover the Packers, we make our predictions for the Super Bowl, and I picked the 49ers, and I can't remember who I picked from the AFC. I think it was the I don't know if it was the Ravens. I think it was Buffalo, actually. And the only reason, you know, Mahomes is the best quarterback in the game, and the quarterback position has such an outsized influence on the outcome of games that, you know, you hate betting against him, but it's really, really hard to repeat in the NFL. Just really hard. You look at, I think no one's done it since the Patriots in the fairly early 2000s where you come back and won. So it's not unwise to pick somebody else than the team that won the year before. So that's the only reason I didn't pick the Saints the Chiefs. And that was a shame on me, foolish to bet against Patrick Mahomes.
Pete Doherty, our guest today, Packers columnist for the Green Bay Press Gazette and USA Today Network Wisconsin. He'll be with us till 12:30. And join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll be back right after this quick look at the news. Stay with us. Talking Super Bowl 58 today on the show. Larry Mueller here looking at how Las Vegas might have been selected for the event, making some predictions about the game. And our guest is Pete Doherty. Pete, back with us, is a Packers columnist for the Green Bay Press Gazette and USA Today Network, Wisconsin. Covered the Packers since 1993, and I hope you'll join in with your own questions about the Packers or about this year's Super Bowl. You can give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. So, Pete, you would have been probably in Las Vegas this weekend if the Packers had made it. Or are you going to be there anyway?
No, I will not be there. And, yeah, if the Packers had made it, all the access to the players and teams starts on Monday night. So we would have flown in on Sunday and not returned until the following week from that Monday.
So you would have been there, let's see, you started in 93. Did you make it to the New England game? I think that was 97.
Yeah, so that was January 97. The next year was San Diego against the Broncos in January 98. And then the 2010 season, 11 Super Bowl, was down in Dallas against the Steelers. And, yeah, I was at all three of those.
What's it like to cover those?
It's a lot. It's really interesting, but it is a lot. They both teams are available for about, I think it's about an hour each day, and at a different site, except for on the Monday night, they're available at the stadium, and then the rest of the week, they're available at their hotels. They clear out a ballroom and have tables and podiums set up all around. And so you take a bus to each of those places, and you know, it takes a lot of planning that week before for, you know, what stories and columns everybody's going to do, and, figuring out who you have available and what connections there are to Wisconsin and to the Packers, and what interesting stories you can do with, because you have every player on every team available to you. I think all the assistant coaches are available most days, and a lot of the scouts too. So it's the access is great, and you can work on stories that, you know, kind of niche stories that nobody else might have thought of, and you have the people, you know, you have direct access to the people you want to talk to. It's a lot easier to talk to an assistant coach. I mean, to try to get a question in on Patrick Mahomes, for instance, I'm sure that's not real easy because he's, you know, surrounded by a mob of people the whole hour.
Yeah, I wondered if you, if a reporter, you know, you'd be thinking, so Patrick Mahomes and Brock Purdy are going to be, there are going to be huge crowds of people around them, of reporters, It's sometimes you can find a maybe even a better story by going to the person who doesn't have anybody in front of them, or maybe one or two.
Yeah, very much so. I remember, for instance, when they played the Steelers, Dick LeBeau was the Steelers' defensive coordinator, and while that person, you know, he had a lot of people around him, it wasn't that many, because the star players get most of that attention. And I know you were talking with Cliff about, I think it was the 62 season and the Lions playing the Lions twice that year. And LeBeau was on those Lions teams. So I remember talking with him about those and how he thought that they had the better team than the Packers that year. But the Packers pulled out a game with a late comeback. I think they won like 14-7 with an interception. I don't remember the details anymore. It's quite a while ago, but anyway, it was great. It was really interesting to that guy. He actually got pretty fired up talking about that, and you could tell it still bothered him that they didn't make the championship game that year.
Yeah, I think Herb Adderley might have intercepted a pass. Near the end of the game, and that turned it around because the Detroit was ahead at the time. Oh my gosh! Well, yeah. So I think it's probably a fun. Well, it's a lot of work, I'm sure, but it's also something you probably look forward to as a reporter.
It's it can be a fairly rare experience. I mean, there's a lot of people whose teams, a lot of reporters who the team they cover has never made it. So it's an interesting and eye-opening experience. I can also attest that by the end of the week, you're pretty much tapped out. But it is really interesting, and it does give you a chance to work on the kinds of stories that you just normally don't have time for or harder to do. And one of the reasons is because you have access to, you know, literally 130 or so people who are either players or coaches or scouts in the league. And there's just so many topics you can explore with some of them.
You know, it is really, and I think you said this, it is really hard to win the Super Bowl. I mean, the Packers made it five times. They won four out of the five times that they were in. And now we look at Patrick Mahomes and Brock Purdy. They were both in elementary school the last time an NFL team won consecutive Super Bowls.
It is really hard. And I two things that seem to be opposite can be true at the same time. You know, the Packers, they had these two Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Rodgers isn't in yet, but obviously he's going to be. So they had Favre and Rodgers for a 30-year span, and they only won two Super Bowls. There is a sense of that's a little light, that they, you know, you would have hoped or thought that they would have won more with those two guys. On the other hand, winning the Super Bowl is really hard, and a lot of things have to go right. Just think of that 2014 season when the Packers – you know, they were the best team in the league by the end of that in the playoffs. They go to Seattle and they have that game won, only to just completely fall apart in the last 5 minutes and lose.
Yeah.
So it's really, I think of Peyton Manning, for instance. He played, I'd have to look it up. I think with the Colts, he was there, I don't know, 15 years probably.
Yeah.
And so that was when he was, you know, he was a great player all those years. They only won one Super Bowl in that time. He ended up winning another in Denver a few years after he went to the Broncos, but by then he was a shell of himself. He could hardly throw the ball. He was a game manager, and they won because they had one of the best defenses of the previous decade that season. So, basically the Colts only won one with him. The Saints only won with Drew Brees. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. So it is very difficult, and a lot of things have to go right. And that's why what Tom Brady did is so exceptional, and that's why Mahomes is – probably going to be in a position to catch or surpass him as the best quarterback he's got in history. He's got a lot of, there's a lot to go between here and there, but he's put himself in position to at least have a chance at it.
Yeah. And he's not that, I can't remember how old he is. He's not very old.
I would guess 28. I have not looked that up, but yeah, he's only been in the league, what, 5 or 6 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's probably 28 right in there.
Yeah. My goodness. Robert in Stevens Point, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, hello. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Hey, I would like to ask, how are the referees chosen? for the Super Bowl.
Hmm.
So for during the regular season, they all work. They have crews, and the same crew, whatever game they're assigned to, it's all the same guys, the same ref, the same linesman, the same back judge, all of that. And then for the playoffs, so all the officials are graded on every game all season. And then for the playoffs, the ones with the best grades work the playoffs. And so they're basically what you would call all-star crews. And then the ones who grade the best through the playoffs are assigned to the Super Bowl. Now, I'm not sure. I'm trying to remember when they actually name the Super Bowl crew. And I don't know if it's before the playoffs are over or not. So I have to think the regular season gradings matter on this too, and are part of the formula. But basically, it's a regular cruise during the regular season, and then all-star cruise for the playoffs and Super Bowl.
Robert, thanks for calling. Appreciate that question. And you can join in too, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Certainly this past year, well, maybe the past few years, this whole issue of officiating has, it's been not been good in a lot of people's eyes.
Well, yeah, and there, you know, the technology has improved so much, and everybody at home gets all these great replays, and things happen so fast on the field. I mean, the officials are pretty good, but they can't match what a camera can do sometimes, and there's angles on plays where they're just not in position. And it's kind of mind-boggling that the league has not gone to the eye-in-the-sky official where there's enough, because they've got the technology to have everybody, they're all hooked up on headsets, where someone sitting in a booth, you don't even need the replay, that person is part of the officiating crew, and can weigh in on any call and say, no, pick up that flag, or, you know, you missed one there that was interference, or whatever call you want to make. And that person would be as much of a crew as any of the part of the crew as any official on the field. And it's just kind of mind-boggling that they haven't gone to that or something approaching that at this point, because they're going to end up there. And so it's just hard to see why the wait when all the technology is available. And, I mean, it's, you know, especially with the gambling we were talking about earlier. To get these calls right as often as possible is more critical than ever.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. Well, this year there was a little kerfuffle a couple of days ago relating to the 49ers and their practice facility. They didn't like the practice facility.
Yeah, so it sounds like where they were practicing, I think it's at the UNLV practice fields. It's artificial turf, but the league put in a grass field on top of that. And it sounds like San Francisco's the people who handle the field in San Francisco and their equipment people thought the field was a little too soft for their liking. And the 49ers tried to get, it sounds like they approached the league about possibly practicing at the Raiders facility, which is where the Chiefs are practicing. And it sounds like the league shut that down, and they say they got the approval from the Players Association too, that the NFLPA thought the field passed muster. And the quotes I saw today from Kyle Shanahan, the 49ers coach, were the field's fine. Basically, I think they don't want this to get in their players' heads.
Yeah,
and they don't want to make an issue of it, since they obviously got no satisfaction from the league in wanting to move to a different field. So. It's just, you know, it's one of those things. That's one thing I learned that first Super Bowl. The week of the game, the smallest little nuggets of news, not that this is that small, but the smallest little nuggets of news for a short time get blown up to epic proportions because all eyes are on these teams and on the Super Bowl. And I guarantee you 5 years from now when they're talking about who won this game, they're not going to be talking about the 49ers practice field.
You mentioned Kyle Shanahan, and his dad was a coach, the head coach for, forget who he was the head coach for, but his...
For the Broncos, yeah.
Yeah, for the Broncos winning the Super Bowl. So if Shanahan wins this year, it'd be the first time ever, I think, a father and son duo won the Super Bowl as head coaches.
Yeah, I would think that's right. I guess I haven't thought that through. And it was Shanahan whose Broncos beat the Packers in the 97 season, the January of 98, the Super Bowl at San Diego.
Yeah. And the other one that I read about was Christian McCaffrey. His dad, Ed, was a wide receiver on those Bronco teams, if I'm not mistaken. So Christian could join his dad as players, father-son players on Super Bowl teams.
Yeah, and you know, I'm sure that's been done before, but you know, and Ed McCaffrey was a good player, but his son's a lot better.
Oh, I see. He is absolutely an amazing player. In my mind, he's got to be not the best player in the league. He's certainly one of the top players in the league, in my opinion.
Yeah, like if you're just you know, picking out players for value and you take the quarterbacks out of it, because they just have such an outsized influence on the games. You know, McCaffrey would be in the top couple. If you had an MVP for non-quarterbacks, I think he'd probably be the favorite to win it.
So you'll be watching the game, I'm sure, on Sunday. What individual matchups are you most excited to see unfold, and maybe and why?
Yeah, there's so much. You know, the Chiefs, Chris Jones, their defensive lineman, is such an important – he's just really, really good. And his pass rushing, you know, they're not quite as talented as they were the previous few years. They've lost some players, age and free agency and all that. But he is so important to their defense. So I'll be watching to see if he's getting – pressure on Purdy, maybe gets a couple big sacks. That could change the game, especially once we get to the fourth quarter if it's a tight game. So that's something to watch. You know, McCaffrey, the way they use him, these running backs, you know, it's funny how the running back position, the value of the position in one way has diminished a lot because there's a lot of good ones coming out of college. These guys get beaten up, so their careers are short. But in another way, they're more important than ever because if you can run the ball, you can really help your quarterback out. And these running backs who can double as quasi-receivers are worth their weight in gold. And McCaffrey is the quintessential example of that. So I'll be really curious to see how they use him, not just running the ball, but passing the ball. And Deebo Samuel's kind of the flip of him. He's a receiver, but also plays some running back. And I think that causes defenses all kinds of problems. So I'll be curious to see how the Chiefs go about defending those two guys.
Yeah, I think so. And Travis Kelce, you know, who's just a great end, and he's going to be up against Brandon Ayuk, who is really a great linebacker. That could be an interesting pairing too.
So Ayuk is a receiver for the 49ers, but you've got Fred Warner is the 49ers.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
He's their all-pro linebacker. And then Greenlaw, their other linebacker, he's the guy who had the two interceptions against the Packers in the playoffs a few weeks ago. That might be the best inside linebacker combination, and covering the tight end will be a big part of their duties. So that, you're right, that is a really big matchup, the Warner and Greenlaw versus Kelce, because Kelce is obviously the Chiefs' go-to receiver.
Yeah. So what would be the most surprising outcome of the Super Bowl 58 in your mind?
I guess the most surprising would be a low-scoring game. It happens every once in a while. But, you know, like a score where nobody hits 20 or a 20-17 game, this just looks to me like it has the makings of a game in the upper 20s to 30s. But I wouldn't be surprised if either team won. I'm not sure what the point spread is. I saw that it was the equivalent of a 59% chance that the 49ers will win. So that's, if they played 10 times, that's the 49ers winning six of them, which strikes me about right. But that's, you know, even enough where would not be surprised at all if the Chiefs won. And as we were talking earlier, it's not never a great idea to bet against Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. Do you think the 49ers will win? Is that your pick?
That's my pick. I thought this going into the season, and no reason to change now that they're top to bottom. They're the most talented team in the league, and they have the most star power. The Chiefs have the best player at the most important position, but Brock Purdy's a very good quarterback himself. So I'm thinking that the better overall team with the really good quarterback will beat the not quite as good overall with the great quarterback team. But, I wouldn't bet a lot of money on it, put it that way.
No, I don't think so. And Brock Purdy is such a great story with him anyway. Mr. Irrelevant, not so irrelevant at all.
No, pretty amazing. He's the last pick of the draft. You know, I haven't looked at what number he was in that draft. I know like when Brady was making his Super Bowl runs, noting that I think because he was a sixth round pick, I think, and he was the 199th pick of his draft, and Bart Starr was the 200th of his draft, or vice versa. One of them was 199th and one of them was 200th. And that's pretty amazing for those guys to have won multiple Super Bowls. And it is amazing. You get the last pick of the draft, and Purdy, I mean, he's clearly a top 10 quarterback and probably a little higher than that. I would say there's a pretty good argument he and Jordan Love are, you know, I mean, they're the two up-and-coming young guns, and maybe even by the end of the season, the two best quarterbacks in the NFC. I'm not sure what happened with Jalen Hurts. And, you know, Love outplayed Dak Prescott. So, you know, Love and Purdy are the two up-and-comers in the NFC.
Going to be some interesting games, I think, between the 49ers and the Packers down the road for sure.
Yeah, and there's quite a history there with those two teams. Yeah. And it sure looks like it. You know, you never know what can derail a team in the coming years, injuries, all those things. But those are two really good players, and that position, you get a really good player there, you're about 80% of the way there.
Pete, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. We'll look forward to having you back again and look forward to the Super Bowl this Sunday. Thank you, Pete.
All right. Thanks for having me, Larry.
Pete Doherty, Packers columnist for the Green Bay Press-Gazette and USA Today Network Wisconsin. It's great to have him with us, and hopefully we can get him back for another Sports Tuesday. Coming up tomorrow on the show, it's another Wildlife Wednesday. David Drake and Jamie Knack are back. They'll talk about, among other things, groundhogs in Wisconsin. And they will share the results of a survey about the money in outdoor recreation. That's tomorrow at 11. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.